10 past 8, a very, very good morning. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem, 101.9 High FM. David Abramson, psychologist in private practice. He's joining us in studio. David, a very good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, so much better. Now you're in my ear. David, you well?
Yeah, thank you.
All right, good. Everyone, you feeling good?
Feeling good. All right, fine. Yeah. And you?
Yes, thank you for asking.
No one ever asks.
No, it's true. Because genuinely, I don't think they care. Anyway, so David, let's not go there. Let's talk about a conversation that's a fairly difficult one. And it's one that we often debate, and I often actually have this conversation with friends, and we talk about this whole the whole issue of couples. We're starting to see couples certainly that have been married for a while getting divorced. You suddenly start to see this whole flurry of them happening, and I don't know why it happens in clusters, but it seems to do that. And I always wonder if it's good for the kids. If it's better for the children to live through the terrible pain of divorce, or if it's better for them, or is it better for them just to stay, for parents to stay together in a marriage that's not a particularly good marriage? I always worry there that, that what they're learning and the modeling that they're seeing is something that's not going to do them any good later on in life. So I don't really know if there is an answer to it, if it's age dependent, if it's sex dependent, how we figure this very, very difficult story out. And, before you start giving me your view on these things, I do want to encourage people to participate in this conversation on 34519 or 0618951019. Are you a product of a divorce? Are your children, have you been divorced, and are your children going through it? Perhaps you're staying in a marriage that is not a good marriage, but you're staying for the sake of your kids if you obviously want to be anonymous or just to make up a name that's perfectly understandable. I would love your view on it because it is a perplexing subject, and it's one that I often think about and wonder, how to advise people and how to talk to friends and colleagues around things like this. David, good morning.
Good morning, Howard. It's a very good place to start because I think the majority of people who get married do not plan to get divorced and don't plan to then have children and then split up. So it's a very emotionally laden decision. Mm. But I think the most important thing to point out is that when you do when you are having trouble in your marriage, that I think logically the first thing to do is to try and resolve the issues. And I think that's the most important place to start. And clearly, we're talking about a partnership. Mm. So we need both people on board, and which is often difficult. But if we can get, the couple into some kind of therapy, be it with a psychologist, a social worker, counselor, and maybe even a rabbi, to start there is very, very important. And I think just to be able...
Do you think every marriage is savable?
No.
I mean, obviously, aside from maybe abuse, physical and or emotional, if that aside, is you saying no?
No, because I think, it takes two people to save a marriage. And sometimes someone clearly doesn't want to save the marriage. They might even be in therapy. They might even be saying that they want to, but they really are out. And that's one of the things that we talk about in a therapy setting, that all exit doors are closed when therapy is happening, because you really got to be committed 100% to the therapy and give the therapy as much as a chance as possible to succeed. But I think to answer your question, Howard, I think the most important thing is it's not about the age of the children. It's not about how long you've been married. It's about A, have you tried to work on it? But then B, really, how destructive has the marriage become? And I think, as you say, especially if you have children, and even if you don't have children, if the relationship is becoming toxic, whether it's becoming destructive, especially when you do have children, that it's emotionally, it's upsetting, if we want to call it on the one hand, and it can go to abusive on the other, where children are being exposed to constant fighting, bickering, attacking. And we need to keep in mind that for a child, especially young children, we're talking, 10 and below, your mom and dad are your foundation. They are your emotional physical, psychological foundation. And to see your foundation fighting, you know, wavering, cracking, is a very, very scary thing for them to see. So,
but isn't it more scary for them to see that that their parents are going to be splitting up, that dad's going to be living somewhere, mom's going to be living somewhere else, that life, I mean, isn't that more scary?
It is. It is. And, you know, that's the interesting thing about divorce is that in psychology, we don't often agree. We don't often say, listen, we have a way of dealing with a situation and we kind of have a blueprint of how we should deal with it. Divorce, we do. Divorce, we do. And I think that's the point, is that if the situation between a couple has become so toxic, there are guidelines to follow to help children through it. And there's no question that if it has become toxic, that actually a well-mediated divorce, which is
better than that. But Lindy, I can see that you've got lots of opinions around
thoughts. I agree with him. Some situations, honestly, cannot be salvaged. And if you can, for lack of a better word, use the word mature. If you can be mature adults about it and consider the fact that you do have other people in the situation, definitely a well-mediated divorce
is better.
Yeah,
than.
Is better.
So what about, I mean, what you're talking about is toxicity in terms of conflict, fighting, bickering, all of that. What happens if it's a cold war at home? What happens if the couple, you know, in front of their kids are, you know, they
pirates.
Seem, yeah, or they're pretty okay with, yes. with their kids. And there isn't this animosity, but there's nothing more that's going on there, or there's a bitterness between the couple. Do the kids always pick up on it?
In the huge majority of the situations, and very young children, it's actually, it's
even if it's all they know.
If it's all, you talk about the model, Howard, and we always talk on the show about how children watch what parents do, whether it's on their cell phones, whether it's how they eat, if they exercise, how they treat other people. It is so important, and kids are not living in a vacuum. They go to other parents or other their friends'
that.
Houses.
Yes.
They watch TV. They have yardsticks to judge by, and it always fascinates me how the research says that children, as young as a year, 2 years, start to pick up a feeling. And it actually affects them emotionally. And it is. It's a very difficult situation. And, you know, I think, you know, it's so ironic because really what you're saying is that there are two people that are emotionally not getting on, psychologically, physically. And now if they have children, they have to work together more than ever. And so, of course, it's a very, very difficult situation fraught with difficulties. But that's when I think adults really need to be adults and realize that they have brought these children into the world. And
well, that's what Lindy's saying. It's about being an adult.
It's about being an adult. But it is such
and
a
it's
difficult
so, so interesting
do.
Because it's ironic. It is all about adulthood, and we're seeing this theme throughout everything that we talk about, in almost every conversation about workplace issues. When I mentor people, this is the thing that I try and work hardest on, is how do we bring the adult into the workplace? How do we bring an adult? Because we've all got this inner child.
Excellent.
And now you've got two people that might be the most wonderful people in the world, but something's going on between them that's probably bringing out that child, and now they're expected to worry about other children when they can't even deal with their own child that's vulnerable and in pain and hurting.
Right. Well, you know, I always say that it's maybe unfair to expect two people who are going through a divorce to be fantastic friends, to get on fantastic, agree on everything. But I think the thing is to keep in mind, and I can't tell you how many times I've heard this, when a mom and dad or partners would say, geez, you know, we made sure that the kids were sleeping when we started to argue. We made sure that the kids were on the other side of the house.
Right.
The kids, I can't tell you how many times the kids say, listen, we were up and we heard this. So I think the important thing is, yeah, we can't expect people who are getting divorced to be perfect, not to fight, not to have arguments.
Well, that's when they get divorced. It's
exactly.
an emotionally...
But to do it when your children are not there and understand that you have a huge obligation and responsibility to look after your children through this process. And so if you're going to fight and argue over money or a visitation, which is a terrible word, I really hate that word, visitation. I don't often say hate because it's a very powerful word, very strong, destructive word.
How psychology is that of him?
My kids aren't allowed to say hate, Howard.
Really?
No.
Hate is only on
so mindful.
Only on certain occasions.
I use the word hate. Or must be 100 times a day.
A day, like,
yeah. I even might fold my arms and stamp my feet when I say I hate it. I don't want to go there for supper. I hate going there for supper. And then
no, we have strict rules around hate.
I'm glad I don't live in your house.
Yeah. You're allowed to dislike. You're allowed to not enjoy.
So there's no stamping your feet and saying, "But I hate it."
No.
That's so limiting. How do you express yourself?
There are other words, Howard.
What, you going to write a poem?
I don't like it.
I don't like it.
Intensely.
I'm upset about it.
Right. No, okay, fine.
But I think that's the point. The point is that be mindful and be the adult. And if you need to be the child, be the children when the children are away. Yeah. Be the children when the children are completely out of the picture and understand how powerful your behavior is and what an impact it's going to have on these children. And I go back to that analogy of you are this child's emotional, physical foundation, and you can cause emotional difficulty moving forward if you bring, for example, children into adult issues. You go tell your mother that she must stop spending money. You go tell your dad that he mustn't bring any woman home, and It's just.
So the kids become the go betweens. Yeah. The kids become the weapon, effectively,
and in a way are pushed to choose sides. Who's the better parent?
Yeah.
Who's doing things right? And again, it's so divisive and upsetting because, the secret to obviously a good divorce is and bringing up children well through it. Is working together as a team as much as possible. Do you have to have the same rules in each house? No, not at all. But really understand that you want to give your children a consistent message, to see that you're working together as a team, still, even if you are living in different houses. But very importantly, that you remain, as you say, remain adults.
All right. Well, we're going to take some music. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation. What I'm going to ask David is a good divorce better than a bad marriage? Renee says the worst part of a divorce is when the children are being used as a weapon. Absolutely, Renee. David, that's got to be the most difficult. I mean, that's what we're talking about. I mean, we're not just focusing on a couple getting divorced and all the pain and the anger, the disappointment, all of that goes around there. We actually are focusing on the children. And when the kids are used as a weapon for the parents, that's got to be the worst. As a psychologist, I would imagine you get a lot of patients, a lot of clients coming to you because they're going through a divorce and parents want to know how to navigate this. How do you deal with that when you see that parents are using a child as a weapon?
You know, you have to be, I always think that as people, we have strengths and we have weaknesses or things we've got to work on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I've had to work on personally, is not go through the back door. You know, that is something that really someone needs to speak for the children. And I know it sounds very
interesting.
I don't know how that sounds, because it's almost like I'm saying, we've got to speak for other people's children.
Right,
to their
parents. I'm with you.
I think for me to make it very clear to the parents what this will do to their child and what this is doing to their child. So I think, it's front door time, and that's where.
So are you very real with parents?
Very real with parents. Mm. Because again, it's so important that they understand that it's their responsibility. When you go to a therapist, when you go to a social worker, you're going for advice. You're going for guidance. You're going to, you're asking on how to best navigate this.
Mm.
And also maybe to mediate certain difficulties. But in the end, no one can help you if you don't take responsibility yourself. So it's really about giving help. You're there to support, you're there to guide, you're there to even mediate at times. But in the end, it's very important, I feel, that counselors, psychologists make it very clear that the buck stops with the parents. They can go to the best. They can go, but in the end, the buck stops with them.
So what's interesting in this case, and we're going to have to just stop for news headlines and we'll come back to it, but what's interesting as well is where you've got one party who is blamed for the divorce, either because they just want to get out of this marriage or because they've perhaps there's been infidelity involved, perhaps there's abuse, whatever it is, there's one party that might be more clearly to blame than the other party. Surely, in a case like that, it's natural for the other party to say, listen, you've caused this. You know, you've caused this. You know, you're responsible for whatever happens to the children. And in a way, the negative reaction of the children validates that which they've always felt. It is 8:30, David. I want you to answer that question. 8:31, David Abramson, psychologist in private practice, joining me in studio, and we're talking about children and divorce. David, the question that I put to you earlier, when one party is quite clearly to blame, wouldn't it be somewhat natural for that other, for the aggrieved party, if such a word still exists and is used, to have almost achieved some form of validation in terms of what the children are going through?
I think, you know, well, let's use, maybe we can make it real. Maybe use an example of an affair.
Yes.
Where there's been, clearly the one party's had an affair and they have caused the breakup of the marriage. It's again, you know, again, we're going back to that same mantra of being the adult, that we need to take into account you know, the age of the child, the you know, the emotional situation, because, you know, we need to evaluate whether the child really needs to know that. And that is when really being an adult comes into play.
That's got to be the hardest, absolutely, because you want to tell everybody.
You want to tell everyone, including your children, this is what your mom did, this is what your dad, and I had nothing to do with this.
Right.
But again, you know, your child will know. Your child will find out.
That's what I think, is they will know.
They will know, whether it's 3, 4, 5 years' time, but they will know, and they will know what happened, and they will know well, at least not all the gory details, but they will know. And I think, again, that is the hardest part, is to not bring the child into this, because, again, he needs or she needs two supportive partners or parents in their lives at that point, because they're feeling very vulnerable because of the breakup. So, again, unbelievably difficult not to say this wasn't my fault. I didn't want this. You know, again, that does create, even though it might be absolutely true, it does create a divide between the parents. So yeah, it's a that is a very difficult.
Is there a better or worse time for parents to get divorced in terms of age of their kids? Because again, what we sometimes see is parents they just can't take it anymore. They get divorced probably with young kids, and if not, often you'll see this whole cycle happening until the kids are older, and then that marriage ultimately falls apart.
You know, I think we need to, as we said from the beginning, we need to just see how, you know, what the environment is like at home. And I think, if it's toxic, if it's, you know, as we said, then, you know, I think then obviously once you've tried to work it out, and if it's not workable, then absolutely.
Use the measure that's available to you, which is divorce.
Right. But,
you know, from a Jewish perspective, you know, we're actually taught about the concept of divorce before we even taught about, about marriage in terms of, in terms of Jewish scripture. So what this says is almost like a cure before the illness, and a bad marriage is an illness.
Right. And I think, obviously if the child is older, heading toward adolescence where they're starting to form a stronger sense of self, becoming more independent, I think it is relatively easier, even though it does vary from child or adolescent to adolescent, depending on their personality, or their personality makeup. But generally, if you are older, it is easier. But I think what's important, Howard, is that, you know, as we said in the beginning, it's that there is a way to sit down with your children and tell them about divorce. And the most important thing is about predictability and consistency when you are talking to children about divorce, because, you know, when you think about it, everything in their lives, it seems, has changed now. What's going to happen? I don't know what's going to occur moving forward. And it's so important to, as much as possible, when you do sit down with children to talk about divorce, that we give them predictability and consistency where we're going to live, what's going to stay the same, what is going to change. If you don't know what's going to happen in the future, you know, we'll let you know. As soon as we know, we'll let you know. Also, very, very important, besides that predictability and consistency, is to, and this might sound quite bizarre, but it's so important to let children know that this is not their fault. I can't tell you how many times a child would perceive doing badly in a test, or that they'd misbehaved, that this, as it's called. Jeez,
we would have been divorced 100 years ago if we relied on our kids to do well at school. Or behave. Yeah. Yeah.
Abby, are you listening?
Right, exactly. It's your fault.
It's your fault, Abby. Right. But absolutely so important to let them know. And even though it sounds completely illogical that they might be the cause, children really, you know, their minds wonder and they try and understand why this has happened. And we need to really make it very clear to them that this is between two adults and they were not the cause.
Listen to this from Sarah. Sarah, thank you for sending this absolutely exquisite message. I was in an abusive marriage. My son came to me and said, "Mommy, you're so unhappy. Can't you get divorced?" I said to him, "Do you know what divorce means?" He said, "Yes. Mommy goes one way and Daddy goes another way." I divorced my husband. I mean, that's incredible, because it's almost like her child actually gave her the strength and the permission to do that. Sarah, thank you for sharing that.
It's so powerful, and it's not as unusual as you think. You know that children come to parents and say, "Guys, this is not working." There's nothing more heartbreaking for me when a parent says, "You know, my child jumped in the middle and said, 'Mommy and Daddy, please stop fighting. Mommy and Daddy, please, you mustn't. How can I make this better? Can I make you a cup of tea? I promise you I'll good mark tomorrow, Mara. Please don't fight.'"
I mean, that's tragic. That is really tragic.
And it's interesting, and it's so powerful what Sarah's saying, is that it does happen where children actually start asking, you know, for a divorce. But then you know it's gone quite far. And you know that things have got to a point where the child is so aware that this is not what marriage should be.
Absolutely. Time is 8:37. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem, 101.9 Chai FM. I've been chatting to David Abramson. We've been speaking about children as they are affected by divorce.